He has his own podcast. What is it, y'all? Get my shit together.
Welcome to the Getting My Act Together podcast for Tuesday, November 14, 2023. I hope your week is off to a great start. I hope you had a fine weekend. You know this is called the Getting My Act Together podcast. Unlike the host of the show that I was on Saturday night, who bullshitted for 10 minutes in between comics before bringing me up and then said, "Oh yeah, hey Joe, what's the name of your podcast?" And I said, "Who gives a shit?" And we were off to the races. I did my first stand-up comedy show in San Diego, California on Saturday night. And I have a long way to go if I want to reach my comedy goals of headlining comedy clubs on a regular weekend basis. That's all I'll say about that. What has come across my attention lately, dear listener, is something I've spoken about on this podcast previously, and it's the prevalence of tipping. Probably depending on how my day is going or how much money I perceive to have in my pocket at any time, does my perspective on the omnipresence of being asked for a tip. I was trying to decide if I was going to say something dumb about a tip. And I forgot what the hell I was saying. Depending on my mood, my money, whatever the case is, would my perspective on the omnipresence of being asked for a tip, would my perspective shift around, move, adjust, evolve? Some days I'd be like, you know what? These people do not get paid that much. Yes, the business is putting it on the customer to make up for what they're not doing. They're not paying. The margins just don't support. It's greedy corporate. And here I was going on and on about supporting the auto workers union. Some days the tip is the tip. What am I trying to say? I'm saying maybe today when I'm recording this is one of those days where it's like everywhere you go. I bought a loaf of bread this morning, for Christ's sakes, and the person's like, "Hey, do you want to leave a tip?" I mean, is that, I guess, by the way, you know, in Atlanta, if you're going to get bread, you go to the General Muir bread place. It's taken me a little while, but I found it in San Diego. It's called Prager Brothers Bread. Holy cow, is it delicious. Prager. But the everybody asking for a tip at every last turn. I go back and forth. But I did just to read an article after this happened, and I felt like maybe it was my insecurity with not leaving a tip this morning when a person just turned around and handed me a loaf of bread. I guess I tip you for that. I did read a little bit about we all, you're not alone, my fellow Americans, we have tipping fatigue. People are tired of being asked for tips all the time. I would love someone, you know who I want to contact me about this topic is not a service industry employee, because the bread store is the bread store. That's not a service industry. I would like not, so tipping fatigue, what it does is we get tired of fucking tipping everybody. And as a result, it would suggest the article I read this morning has led us to not tip as much to people who normally are accustomed and perhaps more dependent on tips, servers, bartenders, unlike people who work in brick and mortar stores like a bread store, who don't get paid as poorly as people in restaurants, I was led to believe. I would love to hear from someone who works in a non-service industry, who has a job not waiting tables, not pouring drinks, where you spin the thing around and solicit tips. Is that why there's apparently a movement of people going back to cash? So you You can say, like you do when you walk by a homeless person, "I'm sorry, I just don't have it. I don't have anything profound to say about this other than I too, I think I have tipping fatigue." And I wonder with the guy at Prager Brothers this morning, am I projecting with my insecurity? Am I projecting a little bit of miffedness by the person when they see I didn't give him a tip? Or did I sense it? Or was it real? Well, I sensed it, so it was real for me. But I thought there may be a little bit like, "Huh, you dick." That's fine. And you know what, though, dude? You got to be in the bread selling business because your heart is in it. It's like I tell my daughter. I say hello to people not so they say hello back. I do it because that's what I want to do. I know there are going to be times where people are not going to say hello back to me. I hold the door for people because that's what I want to do. In part because I want to live in a world in which people were willing to hold doors for one another. But I just think it's the courteous thing to do. You're coming behind me, I'm going to hold the door for you. If you don't say thank you, I'm not going to fucking flip out about it. Because you know what? You might be going through something. You might have a lot on your mind. It could be the worst day of your life for all I know. If so, I don't know why you're in the Starbucks, but maybe you need a cup of coffee to get you through. You have to do what is true to you regardless of how people are going to react to it. And I mean that very specifically when I'm talking about your own code. I'm not talking about being a, you know, sociopath and not giving a shit about other people. I'm talking about you're in the bread game. Sell the goddamn bread. If you're setting yourself up to be disappointed about every single human being who may not leave you a tip, then maybe you're not in the right game. You know what I mean? You shouldn't even look because you're only going to be disappointed. What has changed and maybe, and I've heard people who are of a certain more right-leaning political ilk than myself really get tilted out about over-tipping or everybody asking for tipping. What has pushed me to, and I'm being like, dude, you know what? These fucking people who are working in jobs are not working in jobs where tips are being solicited, are not being paid a great wage. And they're being, taken advantage of by their corporate overlord employers. The least you can do is throw them a few extra shkadol and say the system's fucked and it's kind of broken, so I'm going to do my part. And yeah, I know the business is getting over on me, but it is what it is. The business is getting over on me by not paying its employees and making me. But just make the fucking price of the thing a little bit more and don't put me through the tipping thing. Because it's one thing to pay for the person's salary, right? Or pay for their wage. Just bake it into the price. No pun intended there, Bredzio. Prager. But it sets up this human like, I'm a dick, you're better. Or I'm tight because I tipped you. I don't like all that. And you know what? Most of us don't. What got me today, as I read this article this morning after the bread purchase, two things. One, I've always sort of, and this is maybe just old, I used to wait tables and bartend though, dude. I don't like tipping people before they've fucking done anything. I know there's a way around that psychologically. You just say that's part of the process here. You throw them an extra dollar. But I can't break away from what tipping really meant to me as it was taught, as you're tipping for some action. Why am I fucking doing this before the action's taken place? I don't like that, and I've never liked that. But even more, what I really don't like and what you're not going to like is a percentage of the tip that you leave on Square goes to Square. Oh, so that whole dollar that you think you're leaving for a person doesn't go entirely to them. Some of that goes to Square. So, believe it or not, the business, not maybe looking out for the best interest of its clients, like the businesses who are using Square, are incented to get more money from you to fill their fucking wallets. And how are they going to do that? By putting this guilt-associated, guilt-adjacent pressure on you. You know, there are multiple wars happening around the world and a few that might kick off at any moment. And this is what I'm talking to you about right now. How I decide to not spread my disposable, my discretionary is the word I want, discretionary income. How I choose to not redistribute my $2 of wealth to people who may have less than I. That's where I am. Am I fucking Republican now? I never thought it would come to this. No, I'm socially liberal, but fiscally conservative. Oh, anyway. The idea that Square takes a piece of the tip, I have issue with. Also, it's probably why Square is like, hey, do you want to... You notice that it doesn't say, do you want to leave a tip 10, 15, or 20%. And I'm all for tipping service people, okay? A lot. Someone does a service for you, tip them a lot. Especially if you have a little bit of money. You get a $60 meal, leaving 20 bucks is not going to break you. Do I do that every time? No. Do I do it sometimes? Yeah, every once in a while. You'll notice it doesn't say 10, 15, 20% on Square's screen. What does it say? 18, 22, 25%. That is a lot more. Why? Because the more you tip, the more money Square makes. God damn it, the corporation has got you again by pitting its citizenry against one another. So please, if you happen to work in a place, I almost said service industry. I'm not talking about servers. If you work in a place that spins that iPad around and asks for a tip in a traditionally non-tipped environment, like a deli where you buy a sandwich and a bag of chips and you spin the thing around, that kind of thing. If you work in a place that asks for tips, solicits tips, and very importantly here, excuse me, is you are paid more than minimum wage. You're paid more than restaurant work or sub-minimum wage in states where, you know, you make less than minimum wage. Those two things have to hold. Write into the podcast, yesjoesmith@gmail.com. Let me know your perspective and how you can look your fucking self in the eye. As... That's what it is. I don't like that we have been pitted against one another. Whether it's new, it's innovative, it's a brilliant business, whatever the case might be, I don't like the fact that the business is using the woe is me of the person standing before me, who again, depending on my day, I might not, depending on any of our days, let's be real honest with each other, we might not give a shit about. Some days we do. Other days we don't, right? When do you... give money to an unhoused person? It depends. Do you do it every single time? No. Sometimes do you have a good set and you're like, that was really fun? Yeah, I'll buy a final call. And I'm not saying that people who work for the Nation of Islam and sell final calls are unhoused. I just mean like, yeah, I had a good time at 529 once and I'm walking down Moreland or Flat Shoals. I'll buy a final call. Even though I'm probably the target of the final call, I had a good set. It's just, I don't like the human interaction. I don't like having to, because I know, because we're being guilted into doing something. We're being forced to adhere to a norm that has evolved. Am I talking myself into why I should do it back again? Well, yeah, it just depends how much you scrutinize your own thinking and your own actions. The person there says, hey, are you going to take this action to do something nice for me? And it's like, what are you going to do for me? I don't know. It's just something that, like I said, it's asymmetrical when it gets on my nerves. But certainly hearing that Square takes a cut of the tip does not make me feel good about the human race. I'll tell you who else does not make me. I'm going to be, this is my new persona. I'm ranty comic. I'm ranty comic pointing out the inconveniences of life, the things that piss me off. And one of them is also when you come to a four-way intersection, the guy who stops 10 feet before the stop sign, just to sort of say he stopped first, and then keeps going and blows before, while you pull all the way up to the stop sign. You may have stopped your car second, but you're still at the stop sign. You should be able to go first. You know what I mean? Those people. This, I know, this is just, maybe this is just things that happened to me this morning. I go to the stop sign, I stop at the stop sign. I'm the first one stopped at the stop sign. You may have stopped there, clever guy, but you also did it 8 feet before you actually reached the stop sign. So technically, it doesn't count. Because I think the right of way, this is ranty, it's not even funny. Unless I'm just like losing my mind on stage. Like, can you believe these guys? They stopped 10 feet before the stop sign. And ow, it's like, what are we doing here? Who am I now? Is it Woody Allen? Is it Sebastian? Is it, who knows? Who knows who I'm doing? Nobody is the answer. But you have to be stopped at the stop sign to have the right of way. It doesn't mean stopping 10 feet. It's 10 feet before. Also, if you're hosting a show and you don't know the podcast host, the name of the podcast, of the performer you're about to bring up, unlike, and you're not dear friends like Brent Starr, who's featured at the beginning of this and every podcast, saying, what's the name of your podcast? Getting My Shit Together. He's at least in the building, but he's also a friend. He's close to getting the name of the podcast, but he's a friend. If you don't know the name of the podcast of the comic that you're bringing up, just don't even mention it. Because what you immediately do, and this is for people who host comedy shows. This is not for the person who was nice enough to have me on the show the other night and host and try to bring me up in a very warm way. I'm not talking shit about that person. I'm just saying, if you're going to run a comedy show or you're going to speak publicly and bring someone up, if you don't remember some positive attribute of them, then don't introduce a negative one into the introduction by saying you don't know the name of the podcast. Therefore, it wasn't worth me memorizing 5 seconds, or in this case of the guy the other night, 10 minutes before he came back up to bullshit. It just devalues the whole process. It devalues the comic. Here's your next comic. He has a podcast. Who fucking cares what it's called? Which just tells the audience, I don't care enough to know this fucking guy's... I'm sorry with the F words today. I realize they're out of control. It's because I was asked for a tip this morning. Just stay neutral. Your next comic has a hilarious podcast. He'll tell you all about it. Your next comic is super funny. You should check out his podcast. Anything like that. Remember, hosts out there, hosts-to-be, you want to bring everyone up in a great light. You want to bring everyone up as if they're the best comic in the world so they can do their damn thing. It doesn't mean that good comics can't do their thing with shitty introductions. And as a matter of fact, a lot of times we can just riff off of shitty introductions. What I'm getting at is an emblem of how San Diego does not value comedy. That's my emerging thesis, is San Diego does not value comedy. But I'm way on the periphery of San Diego comedy. Each and every week you hear me try to chronicle a progress from the hinterlands of San Diego comedy more into the mainstream, where I hope to find that comedy is highly valued. But there's no need to bring up the guy and say, he has a podcast. What's your podcast? Like, this is all just amateur hour. And it's almost like why do you say your next comic? He did 3 minutes at the comedy store in La Jolla the other night and ran the goddamn light. Can you believe that? And the nerve. He has a podcast. Why on the earth would you want to listen to that? It's late Monday night. It's not even late, but I'm on my way back. Wait a minute. This is way too loud. I am on my way back from, you know where, Barrio X Brewing. I listened to the last minute of what I'd recorded previously, and you know what? The guy's introduction for me was perfect, because of the fact that I ran the light and got played off the stage and made it like a goddamn Benny Hill skit. He should have just said, your next comic is a dope. Who gives a fuck? Here he goes. And that would have been appropriate. I had a good time on that show, as it turned out. But if you want to be a good host, I gave you the elements of how to do that. I'm on my way home from Barrio X. Despite Barrio X Logan, Barrio X Brewing in Barrio Logan, San Diego, California. It's my home on a Monday night. It's 10 minutes. It feels like it's like 10 or 12 minutes from my house. I'm in. I'm out. I do my little... Some guy the other night asked me, A, if I was in the military. And then he said, hey, those were good skits you did. I do my little skits at Barrio X Brewing. And I'm on my way home. I could go out three more times tonight if there were three other spots. As it is, I'm going to go home and confer with my wife, which means sit and have a drink and probably watch this goddamn show, Yellowstone. So the podcast is going to be truncated tonight. It's very interesting considering what I told you about being in the hinterlands of San Diego comedy. Yet I still find myself, I'm wondering to myself, well, is this going to be compelling over time if I emerge from this scene and accomplish my comedy goals? Wouldn't that be a compelling story? And the answer is absolutely. The other thing, though, is I just keep going. For better or worse, delusion or not. Despite being not demoralized about San Diego comedy after, you know, last week, one of those was me, hanging myself at the Comedy Store. The show on Saturday, I had a good time, but it was not a great time, you know, talking about valuing things. I just go back out, and there I am, Monday night, Barrio X, working on bits. Is it like a fighter who's been knocked down sometimes and just keeps getting up one too many times? Like, hey man, just stay down. The answer is no. I don't know how to do that. I'm that guy who's going to get brain damage continuing to waddle back into the middle of the ring. And that's what I did tonight in my favorite Monday night spot, Barrio Logan. Barrio X. Barrio Logan. There were people in there. It was great. We have this show Yellowstone. What can you say about it? It's beautiful. That's what you can say. It's nice to look at. There's some fast, interesting plot lines. The violence and the evilness of the characters, it's amazing with each, and I'm only halfway through season two. If you have watched it, if you haven't watched it, you know, feel free to chime in. I'm only halfway through season two, and it seems like with each new character that gets introduced, they become more evil than the last. Like, there's no way somebody could be worse than that character. And it's like, oh yeah, really? Hold my beer. And they come and they're more horrific and more greedy and more violent. And the violence is getting almost cartoonish. Maybe this is how it is in those scenarios on a day-to-day basis. Certainly and fortunately, it's not the world in which I live, and I'm grateful for that. But the violence, it's getting more and more violent. And the other thing about the characters they keep introducing, if you've watched the program, you'll know that not only are they more evil or like ascending degrees, increasing degrees. I can turn off my car. Why not? Increasing degrees of evilness. They also are more and more powerful. Like, okay, you own the cops and every commission and every state legislature. And it's like, at some point, these guys become like God. And maybe that's how it is in Montana. I don't know. I have a weird relationship with the show. And then the woman, who apparently is a phenomenon, the daughter, Beth, she's out of control. She's out of control, and she is horrible to every single person she encounters. And because of that, though I do relish her keeping it realness, I do wonder how actually realistic she is. Maybe she's not supposed to be realistic, but she is awful to every single person that I can see on the show. So that's why, because of that dumb show that I'm going to watch, that you're only getting this abbreviated podcast, more characteristic of one that you would receive on Friday. But I realize now it's already 25 minutes in. The least I can do is take you to the full 30 minutes. And I will do that by telling you it's hard being... What did I want to say? I wanted to say that my daughter was challenging today. And it's hard not to think that every issue that my daughter ever raises, which she is a champ. And when champ, there's no evaluation, there's no judgment. I just mean, like, she's such a good kid. She's so sweet. She does the right thing. And she fucking tests her mom and me occasionally pretty strongly, which contributes to our frustration. But she's 4 and a half, almost 5 now. Can you believe she's going to be 5 years old? It's amazing. In January. But then she'll kind of like, then she just like bounces back. And my wife and I are still like shell-shocked from like, girl, nobody talks to us like that. And, you know, nobody is this strong-willed against us in our real lives. So what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that if you're a parent, you know there are ups and downs. And what you must do is remind yourself, like life, like any endeavor worth pursuing, it's a marathon, not a sprint. That is where I was this evening, or late this afternoon. After I picked her up from school, here's what a great life we have. My wife and I went to her school for flag raising. They do the Pledge of Allegiance at her little hippie liberal coastal elite school, but they only do it once a week. That's, you know, fair enough. And it is San Diego. It's a pretty big military town. But they call it flag raising. It's very cute. The student council presidents at 5th grade or whatever they are, 7th grade, they come up and say a few things. Teachers highlight whatever the week is. They had a Diwali dance today that some Indian students put on. And it's just kind of like a 10-minute little assembly. And the parents are there. There's coffee. That's how great our lives are. We were there. My wife and I were at the school this morning for the ceremony at 8:30. And then I picked my daughter up this afternoon at 3 p.m. And we had a lovely evening, or lovely, I should say, drive home. And then inside, she acted to us, which is really like on my radar of things. I flip out when I feel like, and it's not true because she's a good kid. I feel like she's showing behaviors of someone who gets too much. And she's not spoiled. And meaning she appreciates the shit she has. And she's not always like, doing Violet Beauregard kind of behaviors. Daddy, give me this. Daddy, give me this. Whatever from Charlie and Chocolate Factory. But I guess because of my wife and my Gen X-ness and our moms being single moms, anytime there's anything that we've learned to not have and our grandparents come from the Depression, that any behavior that's along the lines of seeming like she's not appreciating it or characteristic of a spoiled child, do we get frustrated? And then she sees that, and then she kind of tries to troll back, and it's just a whole thing. So that's what happened this afternoon. It's a marathon. There was something I thought much more interesting in there that I was going to stop and start talking about. I was talking about my daughter's getting things, not acting, I don't know what it was, and I'd have to plumb back into... Well, here, watch this. I can pause recording and listen to what I said 3 minutes ago and tell you what I was thinking. Done. And exactly here's what I was thinking that was way more interesting than me whining about my perfect, an angel straight from heaven child. What I was going to say is my wife and my Gen X-ness and having grandparents and the recession and all this, who were kids during the recession, depression or whatever it is, you know, they understand the value of a buck. Here's something that is when you're listening to someone
bullshit you, this should set off an alarm bell. And I'm thinking of like politicians or public figures who hold themselves out as better than us. They refer to their grandparents being in the military. Like, what is his background? His grandfather was in the military. Did he serve? No, but his grandfather, he's proud of his grandfather's military. I've seen politicians say this. Well, my grandfather fought in this war and that war, and my grandfather and my grandfather. And here is why it should be such a bullshit giveaway for you. And I'm not telling you what to think or do. Because all of our grandparents did, you fucking simple person. All of our grandparents did. Because they were the greatest generation. But I heard some politician or someone say, well, it was a tradition that, you know, my grandfather served in. Dude, all of our grandparents did, okay? Except for George Bush. All right, have a great week, and I'll talk to you on Friday with a full 45 for you then.